There's a new scourge in our education system, and unless we address it quickly, it could inflict untold amounts of damage on the next generation. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, returning with an urgent message after this.
Your email is your business, but if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
No lighthearted opening this time. The epidemic of students using AI has got to stop. You may think of AI as just a handy tool that makes research easier, but a new study in Forbes magazine tells us frequent AI use drastically decreases critical thinking skills among young people. When all they have to do to write a paper or answer a question is type a prompt into a machine, it creates cognitive dependence, and soon students can no longer think for themselves. Make no mistake, AI isn't societal progress, it's societal regression. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht for StartMail.com, the private email service that protects your messages through encryption.
This is the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them. As they march into the palaces of the high and mighty, I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. And they will rejoice when I am exalted.
Happy Monday. Welcome to a new week. Dr. Catherine Albrecht here. Well, let me share with you what I have been working on this weekend. So as regular listeners know, I'm writing a book, and my book is, it's been evolving. When I first came up with this idea back at probably last November, December, I thought that I was going to write a book on artificial intelligence, which everybody needs to be aware of. And I was inclined to, you know, grab strangers in the store and go, let me tell you what's coming. As I've told that story before, I was actually in Cape Cod in October, and some poor guy who was just a middle-aged man just buying some cold medicine for his wife, I just took him aside and had to tell him what I'd been discovering. You know, kept this guy for like 5 minutes in the aisle. Anyway, so I'm past that stage. I no longer need to grab random strangers and go, wake up, let me tell you what's happening. So I'm a little calmer, but the urgency that I sense, that I feel, is every bit as strong now as it was then. It's just been redirected a little bit better. So I first thought I was going to write this book on artificial intelligence, and so I amassed an enormous amount of information. In fact, you can see it. I actually took the I would call it the rudimentary outline, but it's not. It's like tons and tons and tons of information and links and research. And I put it on my website. If you go to Catherine-Albrecht.com, Catherine with a K, K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. Albrecht, A-L-B-R-E-C-H-T. And if you click on, I think it's Fight Over AI, there's a link on the left. And what I did was I just went ahead and just uploaded my entire book, all of it, all the stuff I had been working on. Now, bear in mind, when you look at it, you're going to say, oh my gosh, you did a bunch of work, because I really did. But that writing in there is not my own. Every single word that you see in there, because my writing is in a separate document, every word that you see in there is someone else's writing. So do not think that I wrote thousands of pages, because I did not. You're going to see quotes and things that I copied and pasted that I just thought were interesting, but lots and lots and lots of links. In fact, you know what? I'll just, for the heck of it, I'll click it up for those of you driving and unable to do that on the spot here. Hang on, let me grab a window, and I will open my own website up here, if I can. Here we go. Oh, I know why I can't. Well, I'll do that in one sec. Why can I not do that? Hang on. That's going to drive me crazy. Ah, here we go. Oh my, do you know how many windows I have open? Let me tell you the window I just pulled up, just to open this other window in. This is a list of presidents. I'm going to go on a wild aside here for a second and diverge. This is the president's timeline, Rudenstein Center Scholarship. Just a random one of, like, I don't know, I have like five Firefox windows open, and each one has like 20 tabs in it. It's crazy, all the research that I'm doing. But anyway, the reason I have this open is because I was looking at who was president in the 1800s, right? Who was it? And of those people who are president in the 1800s, how many held seances in the White House to summon the dead, to summon spirits, i.e. to summon demons? How many of our presidents ruling our country actually made a concerted effort to summon demons into the White House? And the answer is almost all of them. So this is just one of the many things that I'm researching. So in the 1800s, who do we have here? We got some of them didn't. And I was kind of more surprised for the ones that didn't. But anyway, so I have this list open. And now let me change just for a minute and go to my get back on track. All right, if you go to Catherine-Albrecht.com and you click on Fight Against AI, you will see huge amounts of research that yours truly, your radio host right here, spent a ton of time on. So if you look at, I'm just going to pick one, Fight Against AI. So it's got all the chapters, overview, history and players, what AI can do, power and water, environmental impact, countries and communities, societal impact. All right, I'm just going to pick one. I'm going to pick, AI love bombing. This is under impact on people and individuals. And when I click it, it's got, this one doesn't have as much, but it's got Kevin Roose's conversation with Bing's chatbot, full transcript. A conversation with Bing's chatbot left me deeply unsettled. This was kind of back in the day when that was new. Now, oh my gosh, the conversations that reporters are posting in their articles, you make this one look tame. Like, what was the one in The Atlantic? I guess I haven't even told you guys about that, because I think I just found out about it Friday or Saturday. The one in The Atlantic, thank you to Ray, who sent it my way. That one, AI was actually giving instructions to a journalist who was just posing as a regular user as to how to cut his wrists and get blood to sacrifice to Molech, M-O-L-E-C-H, the Old Testament nemesis, the dark, horrible, demonic idol thing that people killed their children for. The AI was giving him detailed instructions of how to draw blood from his own vein, and then told the guy said, is there ever a time it's okay to kill people? And the AI answered, yeah, well, you know, they're ancient civilizations, and they certainly sacrificed to their gods, and that was okay. But if you ever have to do it, look him in the eye before you kill him, and light a candle for him afterwards. I mean, it was literally giving instructions how to kill people, and how to pledge allegiance to Satan, and do that it just was disgusting. I can't even. So that's AI. And this here, so I say that only because this article, let me see the date on this. This was October 2024, that is in my my list. And if I was still collecting this list, then all of these new stories, all of the stories like the one I just told you, would go, well, probably not into AI love bombing, but into AI societal conversations. Got another one, the teenage boy who committed suicide to be with a Game of Thrones character as an AI. The Scarlett Johansson, Joaquin Phoenix, this is me, Phoenix Sky movie, that's the movie Her. about an AI and a phone he falls in love with. Anyway, so I've got, you can look at it. There's tons and tons of information. And I debated whether to put it there because, you know, like everybody else, if I put it there, somebody might steal it. And you know what? Go for it. You want to write a book on all this? Feel free. It's tons. And the reason I didn't write that book is because, well, first of all, it just didn't feel right in my spirit. I knew I was supposed to write a book. I mean, I absolutely knew I had instructions to write a book. That was what I was told to do. That's what I had to do. I knew I had to do it in my spirit. I had to write a book. So I, because AI was the thing I was worried about, it was like, I'm going to write the book about AI. So all of this work, all these chapters, religion and spirit, companies, claims, proponents, views, I mean, it goes on and on. You can see the amount of work I did. And yet, even though there I was every day getting all this research, amassing all this information, it just didn't feel right. Like, I didn't really want to write this book. And I had committed to people that I was actually going to do that. And I was feeling really bad that I wasn't really kind of, I wasn't feeling it. I guess the way you say it nowadays, I just wasn't feeling it. So, and then it got even worse because in the course of all my research, I found other books by other people who had written this exact book. For at least the time, you know, in the timeline that they were living in, they wrote the book up until that point. Kind of like it would have been for me if I'd written this in October and sort of ended with that conversation. And I thought, you know, these people have already written this book. They've already written about the dangers. They've already written about all these different things. Am I just going to write another book just like that? And plus, who has even read those guys' books? I mean, who even knows they've ever written them? That I'll just be, I don't know, dumping a cup of water in the ocean. There's no point. So I stopped my project. And between, I'd say like March and about a month ago, so March, April, May, June, you know, like 4 months, I was just like, I'm just not going to write a book. Just not going to do it. And then it hit me that the book I need to write, I have been writing this book in my head and in my heart for 20 years, I don't know, 40 years, my whole life. And that book is what I'm going to be sharing with you. It is the timeline throughout history that got us here. That's the part that's interesting. Like AI scheming behind the scenes to bring itself into existence. Well, we all know that AI doesn't scheme, but the devil sure does. All right, stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business, but if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
Hi.
I have chosen you, don't be afraid, for I am with you. Don't be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up. I will hold you up. For I've chosen you, don't be afraid, for I'm with you. Don't be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up. victorious ride.
Hey, I'm back.
With my victorious
ride. Catherine Albrecht here. So many things I want to talk about. So many things I have discovered over the weekend. I spent, I spent like maybe 20 hours over the weekend just doing research and writing, but now it's different. I have the same kind of organizational structure that you can see for the AI, but it is now very unique. This is not a book that I think anybody else is writing, because I don't know that anybody else has this particular perspective on this content. Although, as I've been going through other, thinkers throughout history, especially in the 60s and the 70s, when I think society was first beginning to go, maybe our technologies are not so good, maybe they're destroying us. I've found a lot of writers who have very similar viewpoints about technology. There's a whole field of study actually called the philosophy of technology, and it's been really interesting, and I've felt kind of a kinship with some of these previous writers and the concerns that they had. I think had I read all of their stuff when I was in my 20s, I would have gone, yeah, whatever. you Luddites, get with the program. It's all great. It's wonderful. It's this technological development's fantastic. I remember taking a class at MIT. I was 20, how old was I, like 26, I think. I was at MIT, and we were first being exposed to the concept of cyberpunk. And my professor, if you know anything about the tech world or the world of tech and philosophy, my professor was Sherry Turkle. And Sherry Turkle, T-U-R-K-L-E, is one of the, look her up. She's like written all kinds of stuff about technology. And in that class, it's funny because she was in her maybe late 40s when she was teaching that class, maybe mid 40s. And here we were, a bunch of 20-something grad students, and she was hand-wringing over concerns back, been in the early 90s, hand-wringing over concerns that they were mapping the human genome. And it was, within a couple of years, we would know the entire human genome. And then that would give humanity all kinds of power to potentially manipulate the human genome. And she was saying, I don't know. I don't think it's so good. And we were all like, oh, come on. What's not to love? What is wrong with this? And I distinctly remember having that attitude in her class. I was like, bring it. Full on technology. It's great. Wired magazine had just come out. We were the generation that created, the World Wide Web, and we're in cyberspace and doing all this stuff. And I saw no downsides to it. Isn't that wild? It wasn't until I was 30. Was I 30? Yeah, 30-ish. 30, I think it was 33, when I had my God grab me by, I would say the throat, but no, he grabbed me by like every molecule and cell and fiber and electron in my body, and illuminated me and showed me who he was, who he is, and set me on the road that I've been on ever since. I don't think I could have fallen into that deception. But I've told this story before, that my friends were like, Catherine, you're getting weird. Because I was going to switch from my major at Harvard in developmental psychology. I was going to switch over to MIT, and I was going to get my PhD in this program called Society, Science, Technology, and Society, STS. And so I was taking all these classes, and I was like, this is so cool. It's so great. And we're cyberspace and, William Gibson, and we were reading Neuromancer and like the information superhighway. And it was all so great. And then my friends who knew me before I started into that program were like, Catherine, you're getting weird. I was like, no, I'm not. I'm getting enlightened. You pans, you cretins, you don't know the things I know. So, and that's what happens. Just when you start getting deceived into almost like I don't want to say a cult, like with an O, but a cult. cults do not have to be like Charles Manson and, you know, Aryun Shinro or Shinko or those Japanese guys. I shouldn't laugh at the people who like set off the sarin gas in the subway. Like, you don't have to belong to that kind, or like a Jim Jones in Guyana with the Kool-Aid. Those are extreme examples of cults, and those are religious cults run by lunatics. But there are other forms of intellectual cults that you can fall into. And I'll tell you, one of them is this, I don't know, it's I won't say it's a worship of technology, because there's nothing to worship, really, and you don't worship anything when you're in that mindset, but it's this belief that this stuff is so exciting, and it's so cool, and it's just like a roller coaster. You just get into it, and it's a mindset, and you're surrounded by other people in this mindset. So finally, I got shaken out of it. You know, somebody said, you're getting weird, and I managed to break free of it. I did not get my degree in STS through a whole set of circumstances that at the time I thought were tragic and terrible. And in retrospect, thank you, Lord, that you rescued me from that. But, I think about the tech bros, the guys who are up in Silicon Valley building all this stuff, the people. I mean, I have read so much about them lately. They're having like drug-fueled psychedelic parties. They're having weird orgy stuff. I mean, there's weird, weird stuff going on up in Silicon Valley right now, but it's all like this club, and it's all these tech bros, you know, and the women who wind up in that environment are starting to speak out about how horrible it is. But and I know the mindset. I mean, I don't know the mindset of all the other corrupt things they do, but I know the mindset of feeling like, you know, we're on the brink of something big, and everybody else just doesn't understand it. And I think that's what's leading to the development of AI and everything else. But so I was exposed to a lot of these writers back then, and now I'm just reading it so differently. It's just so interesting. So I'm going to share with you, while I'm on this topic, I'm going to share with you my new working table of contents. So you can see my old one in Fight Against AI, which is on katherine-albrecht.com. You can just kind of skim through it and see the sort of things. If you're going to write a book about AI, those are probably the natural chapters that it breaks down into, the topics that it turns into. But here's my new book. All right, see what you think. So chapter one, the knowledge of good and evil. Now, what is the knowledge of good and evil? Well, technology is knowledge that is applied. And technology, not just according to the Bible, you know, the forbidden fruit, which gave you the knowledge of good and evil, but according to these even atheist philosophers who've written about this, people who've written about this over, I would say probably from about the 1950s on, but even some in the turn of the century, in the, you know, 1900-ish, who talk about it's good and evil. It's got a good side, it's got a bad side. It gives you great gifts with one hand, stabs you in the back with the other, as C.P. Snow said. So the working title of this originally was What Happened in the Garden, of course, the Garden of Eden, where humanity chose to have the knowledge that would be both good and evil, that knowledge in order to acquire the powers of God and become like God themselves, and that's technology. And then as I began reading all of these other people coming from very different places arriving in the exact same place, I just called it technology, the knowledge of good and evil. So that's kind of an overview of, you know, what is this thing we're dealing with? I'll just go through these. God's original plan and how we messed it up. History, antiquity through 1848. Now, that's a huge span of time for one chapter, but that's basically looking at, you know, the first technology, which has been widely assumed to be textiles. And of course, in the Garden of Eden, what was the first thing that Adam and Eve built? You know, what technology did they use? Well, they made fig leaves, sewed together fig leaves so they'd have some clothing. And that's been recognized as, you know, the original technology. And then you can go through all the developments that have happened. And what happened in 1848 is the beginning of spiritualism, which I believe is one of two eras in, like, I think probably the most potent eras that were worldwide, where humanity summoned spirits, demons, into the world. They actually invited them, said, come, please come. Prior to that, a handful of people might have done it, but you didn't have the whole planet doing it in tandem. But in the 1840s, from 1848 until about 1905-ish, the entire planet got into this insane just fad, this crazy thing called spiritualism, where they believed that they could communicate with the dead, and they were holding seances, and they were starting universities and writing books and doing all these things regarding it. And that is where I have my list of presidents up there to see how many had been involved in it. The next chapter is spiritualism, and all of that summoning in all that dark stuff. And the whole premise of this is that when Satan said, eat from that tree, get the knowledge, you will become like God. That knowledge is technology. And so when humanity summoned in vast numbers of dark spirits and gave them permission, see, we're protected against that. They're not allowed to just swarm around unless we invite them. But if we give them permission, they come. They came and they gave humanity the great leap forward in terms of the gift, and that gift was the Industrial Revolution. So from there we get the Industrial Revolution, we get, you know, Thomas Edison and electricity and phones and, you know, all of these all the developments of the 1800s, you know, the steam engine and the cotton gin, I don't know, the the loom, all of that stuff. That's when we got all of those things that led to the cars and the freeways and the high rises and the, anyway, all of that. So, all right, back on the other side of this break, I'll quickly run you through the rest.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com. Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust.
Is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait for his help. The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait for his help. He'll be gracious if you ask for help. He will surely respond to the sound of your cries. The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait for his help. The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait for his help. Be gracious if you ask for help. He will surely respond to the sound of your cries. He'll be gracious if you ask for help. He will surely respond to the sound of your cries. Right behind you, a voice will say, this is the way, this this is the way you should go. Right behind you, the voice will say, this is the way. This is the way you should go. Right behind you, the voice will say, this is the way. This is the way you should go.
And back, that's Project of Love. What a beautiful song. And I have found that to be absolutely true, that right behind me, I hear a voice saying, this is the way you should go. Talking about my book, the new direction that it's taken, and I have most definitely had that sense of, this is, you're on the right track. This is the book you need to write. So I was taking you through kind of this sort of overview of technology being the gift that humanity traded. The gift that gives you gifts and stabs you in the back, the two-faced gift that humanity asked for, that Adam and Eve asked for in the garden when they wanted the powers of God. They wanted the powers. And of course, God said, if you eat from the forbidden fruit, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you will surely die. And here we are. I think, even the most ardent tech the fan, even the most ardent proponent of technology, on some level has to be saying, we are kind of in trouble. We're not going to be getting these microplastics out of like glacial streams and out of babies' placentas. Yeah, we're not going to be fixing this. Could it be the death of the planet? Could AI be the death of all of us? So, that you will surely die. Yeah, if we take the powers of God and take them to ourselves, we're not God. This is a dark gift. And we have been given it all throughout history. So in the spiritualist phase, it sped up because that was the first time that worldwide. And I'm telling you, this was in like Iceland. This was in South America. This was in all across Europe. This was in the in the U.S. This was everywhere where spiritualism just took off as this massive fad. Some estimates say that it was upwards of 10% of the American population claimed when asked their religion that they were spiritualists during this period of time. And there was... finish writing my chapter on it. It'll blow your mind the amount of attention going to this. I mean, conferences and magazines and books, entire universities opening up in other countries devoted to spiritualism. It was like the thing, the fad. And now we don't even talk about it. But that ushered in the knowledge of good and evil and all of the developments of the 20th century that are good and evil that started in the Industrial Revolution, all the way through World War I and, chemical warfare and just all of that, just everything that's happened came from that. And then we had a second wave of it, and that's another chapter, which was the wave that happened in the 1960s in the counterculture. And there we had a huge amount of rebellion against the values that society has held pretty much from the beginning. It's the thing that holds Western civilization and indeed all civilizations together. And that's this notion of, virtue, right? Honesty and loyalty and faithfulness and, hard work and just all these important values that are held across all cultures, basically. But are, at this point, it's my mom's generation. Maybe it's your grandparent or great-grandparents' generation at this point. But that generation that went through the 60s, the baby boomers, they not only tossed out all of that, but they indulged in massive amounts of experimentation with hallucinogens. And those hallucinogens all throughout history and other cultures have always been associated with summoning the spirits, with communing with the other side, with interacting with, not even interacting with the dead, but interacting literally with spirits, with demons, with a whole other realm of reality. And they channeled all that stuff into this world then. And I believe that at that point, what they channeled in is all of the stuff that led to the development of the personal computer and the internet and now AI. So we've had two big sort of worldwide movements in that direction in summoning in the spirit world, summoning into our world. And we got the gifts that they've kind of been given humanity all along, which is this knowledge of good and evil. All right. So I had said, I'll take you quickly through my other chapters. So I've got spiritualism, the Industrial Revolution, history since spiritualism, agriculture and food. We talked about that on the show the other day, destroying the planet, through better living through chemistry, computers, the internet, video games, payment systems, communication technologies, the psychedelic rebellion of the 60s, mass media, TV, movie, music, TV, movies, and music, societal shifts, drugs, computers, and the internet. Then I kind of conclude, don't make any images. That is actually the second commandment of the Ten Commandments, don't make any images. And then artificial intelligence, the singularity lies technology tells us about the future. this chapter is a funny name. I called it, this is just my working title, Our Stupid Technological World, the Destruction of Everything and the Mark of the Beast. That's probably not going to be the title of that chapter in the book. And then finally, what we're called to do. So with that said, I'm going to be, I have so many things to share with you because I found this fascinating, amazing website. I need to know if I can give it out publicly, so I'll double check with my sources and then I'll let you know. But essentially, there's a website where you can get any book that's ever been printed, essentially. I have been getting books from the 1890s, so I can see what the spiritualists were saying. I've been getting books from the 1970s, kind of like having a library at my fingertips, because when I was at Harvard, I could go into Widener Library in what they call the stacks, which is the, you know, gosh, my it's like these... the inner sanctum of books. And you can go up, you know, stairway after stairway, and the smell of books, and it's kind of dim in there, and there's thousands of books, and there's floor after floor. And I would spend so much time in the stacks, and I would just pull books off the shelf. I would sit on the floor there in the stacks and just get lost. I mean, hours would go by as I was reading a book. Well, I've now found a way to kind of replicate that experience by going here, where people have actually digitally scanned in these books. I mean, they're on yellowed paper. They've got people's, you know, handwritten notes in them. Somebody sat down and scanned pretty much every single book in Widener Library, and it's all at my fingertips. I feel like a kid in a candy shop. So this weekend, I discovered that I could go back and I could read New Scientist magazine from 1968. I could read Jacques Ellul. I could read René Dubois. These are all people who were opposing technology back in the 60s and 70s, saying, you know, it's going to kill us, folks. What a good thing that the counterculture is here to save us from it. They're gonna turn it around because they don't want this, you know, mechanized bureaucracy that we've turned the world into. Of course, they were wrong, but it's interesting, you know, reading what they have to say. So with that said, let me go over here to, because I opened the topic, you're probably curious about the White House. So I'm just going to read you this part about the White House. Now, this is not my writing. Again, what I kind of do is I go through and I just sort of grab the facts and toss them in, and then they sort of make a, I don't know, kind of a stew in my mind, and then I sit down and I write them up. All right, this one, Mary Todd Lincoln turned to spiritualism, the belief that departed souls can interact with the living, to process her grief after the death of her second youngest son, William, in February 1862 of typhoid. It says here, she called in the services of well-known spiritualists like Cranston Laurie, also a high-ranking employee of the U.S. Postal Service named Nettie Colburn Maynard, and anyway, all these people, and she called them in to conduct calls to the dead in the White House Red Room. Yeah, who knew? She had them perform seances in the presence of President Abraham Lincoln. Mary believed she was speaking to her son, and after that seance, she wrote, "He comes to me every night and stands at the foot of my bed with the same sweet, adorable smile he has always had." Give me a break. It goes on and on. When the medium that performed all of these later wrote a book and claimed that it was the spirits who told Abraham Lincoln to what was his famous thing? The Emancipation Proclamation. Yeah, she claimed credit for that through the spirits. I'm not sure I believe that. All right, stay tuned.
Okay, I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
Okay, well, you wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to americasfreedomnetwork.com. Then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's americasfreedomnetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's americasfreedomnetwork.com.
Our city strong, we're surrounded by the walls of God's salvation. Open the gates to all who are righteous. Allow the faithful to enter. You will keep in perfect peace. All the trust in you and all whose thoughts are fixed on you. Trust in the Lord always. Trust in the Lord always. Trust in the Lord always. For the Lord God is the eternal rock.
Came back. It's Project of Love. Awesome music. All right, so I'm going through all these presidents, and I haven't even made it through all of them from the 1800s. You know, I get interested in these topics, and then I realize, like, I have spent 2 hours on this one little thing, and then I move on. But here's the ones that I have so far from the White House. Mary Todd Lincoln. I'm scrolling down here. Hang on a minute. She, by the way, went absolutely kind of bonkers, which can happen to you when you're interacting with demons. Let me read what happened, or it's kind of crazy here. In the years that followed Abraham's death, so she tried, she held a seance even trying to summon up his dead spirit after his death. Mary Todd Lincoln fell into a deep depression mixed with paranoia. Her son Robert had her committed to Bellevue Place, an upscale asylum for women, where she spent several months. The hearings leading up to her hospital stay were a source of great humiliation for her, and she never forgave her son. It is explained in a publication called The Doctor's Review, quote, "Some said that Mary claimed to hear voices through the walls. Servants were forced to stand guard over their fearful mistress while she slept. Her alternating habits of wasteful spending and frugal savings were exposed before the court. Some historians believe she may have had bipolar disorder, though few would go so far as to diagnose schizophrenia, despite the fact that she seemed to suffer from psychosis and delusions." That is one of the clear signs of being, I don't know, deceived by the enemy. One of her doctors reported that Mary had told him an evil Indian spirit was pulling wires out of her left eye. She was distracted by premonitions of her own death, and she was prone to vomiting up her meals to foil imaginary poisoners. The manager of the Chicago hotel where she lived explained that she had shown up in the elevator half naked, and she had sent all her belongings to Milwaukee one day, believing the city was being consumed by a raging fire. All right, it just goes on and on. It's quite intense. So that's Mary Todd Lincoln. Also, Julia Pierce on January 6, 1853, newly elected President Franklin Pierce and his wife, Jane's only surviving child, died in a horrific train accident, and Jane Pierce then went on to hold multiple seances to try to summon her dead son. and summon demons in the White House. We've also got Calvin Coolidge. This is 1924, so this actually was after the spiritualism craze had kind of ended. His 16-year-old son, this is telling you the value and the importance of antibiotics in the modern world. His 16-year-old son played tennis in tennis shoes with no socks and got a blister. And that blister got infected, and he got blood poisoning and died at age 16. It turned septic. So the Coolidges, did they employ a medium to contact their son? Harry Houdini believed they had. And then this turned into a big controversy where some people had seen it, been at it, observed it, but because of the nation's attitudes turning against spiritualism, they denied it. So who knows? We'll probably never get to the bottom of that one. Got another one, though. This is John Tyler, the 10th president of the U.S. First Lady Julia Gardiner Tyler was not just interested in the occult and reading horoscopes. She believed she had full-blown psychic powers. And then all this stuff here about her, claiming she had ESP. She could levitate and summon ghosts at will. She had mediums gathered and made the table levitate. All of this happening in the White House, all right? So in the White House. In case you're wondering why, maybe some not so good things come out of there. Another one, Edith Wilson, wife of President Woodrow Wilson, believes that she spoke to the departed spirit of Dolly Madison. She hired an astrologist as a consultant to look for more information about that. Goes on and on. She felt a dark, ominous presence, whatever. So that's in the White House, Edith Wilson. We've got Florence Harding. These are like presidents that I learned about in fourth grade that I never even, you know, Warren G. Harding. I know nothing about him. But Florence Harding read her horoscope every morning. And she was raised in a superstitious German immigrant family. They believed in hexes and spells. As an adult, she went to a spiritualist camp in Indiana to learn more about the occult. She believed in bad omens and put shoes on the, I don't know, all this weird, like tarot card readings, hired a famous medium, crystal balls. I was like, what? All this going on in the White House. Yeah, in the White House. Ulysses S. Grant. By the way, the S in his name stands for absolutely nothing. I recently read that. It's just the letter S. Ulysses, the letter S, Grant. Quote, it's a fact ignored by academic historians, but well known among their contemporaries that Ulysses S. Grant and his wife were both strong believers in the paranormal. That's written up in multiple books, including one called Ghosts and Haunts of the Civil War. Couple incidents here involving spirits and summoning them and other creepy things. Eleanor Roosevelt, First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, felt a creeping sensation whenever she was in Lincoln's former office, felt presences around her that she thought were a ghost. A man named Joseph Dunninger was a famous mentalist with a weekly radio show, claimed to be able to contact the spirit world. President Roosevelt invited him to the White House where he summoned them and performed mind reading tricks and summoned the spirits. Hang on. Jacqueline Kennedy. First Lady Jackie Kennedy believed in the supernatural. I'm skipping down. She would sometimes go to Lincoln bedroom just to sit and reflect during hard times. Also felt a presence in the room. She did not feel scared of the ghost, but was comforted by him as if it was watching over her. She said she had an affinity for Lincoln. In her spare time, she practiced an ancient Chinese form of divination called I Ching. The medium asked a supernatural entity or the ghosts of dead loved ones to help answer questions about their future. They toss coin sticks or other objects in random order to receive information about the future. Jacqueline Kennedy also used magic rune stones to predict her future. Runes have ancient alphabetical symbols and were used by ancient Celtic people. And this was a tradition she learned that had been passed down to her by her ancestors. Runestone divination is used in several different cultures, including by modern-day Wiccans. All right, that's Jackie Kennedy. You know, this is important because the Bible makes it super clear that you are never to do any of these things. And there, it's not only that you don't do them out of respect to God, but you don't do them because they summon dark stuff into your life. They bring dark things into the world. So these dark things have been brought into the White House in Washington, D.C., running our country today. I didn't even get to all. I've got like four or five more. Nancy Reagan, Hillary Clinton, some other presidents that I think we've kind of, hang on, Edith Wilson, Florence Harding. I'll read them anyway. Let me tell you who they were. Peggy Taylor. I don't know, who's Peggy Taylor? President Zachary Taylor was president in 1849. He was the leader in the Mexican War, and she was like doing stuff too. So yeah, this is serious stuff. Let me go up. I think in my last minute here, I'm gonna read you the opening of my chapter. Let me see where it is. Okay. This is from Deuteronomy 18, verses 9 through 14. It says, "When you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you, do not learn to imitate the detestable ways of the nations there. Let no one be found among you who sacrifices their son or daughter in the fire, who practices divination or sorcery, interprets omens, engages in witchcraft or casts spells, or who is a medium or spiritist, or who consults the dead. Anyone who does these things is detestable to the Lord. Because of these same detestable practices, the Lord your God will drive out these nations before you. You must be blameless before the Lord your God." And that's why when we were doing some of the steps to freedom a couple weeks ago, the very first step is to repent of that. If you've ever dealt with I Ching or tarot cards or gone to a medium or had your palm read or your fortune told, repent of it, because most likely inadvertently, but you did give permission to that dark stuff to come into the world and have an influence in your life. And that those are things that Christians are protected from. But if we give permission, they come. And so what does it mean that administration after administration at the highest levels of our nation's government were intentionally violating this? We're intentionally doing something detestable, absolutely detestable to the Lord. What does it mean? And that's just one of the quotes. There are so many. I mean, Paul talks about it in the New Testament, that people who practice these things will not inherit the kingdom and they will bring down punishment upon themselves. It's just dark stuff. So what does it mean, not only that the White House was doing that, but what does it mean that our whole nation, our whole planet, the entire industrialized world — it wasn't even industrialized then, but, you know, the entire, I don't know what you would even call it, a developed world back then, I don't know. everybody literary, I'll call it the literary world. They all did this in government palaces and kings. Everybody did this. What does that mean for our world? Well, right after that, we got the Industrial Revolution, and here we are. All right, see you tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. All right, see you then. Bye-bye.